Hello and welcome to a podcast where we take fictional science from comics, movies, TV, etc. and try to make it factually, scientifically, possibly real. I'm Stoby.
I am known as Forgan.
And I'm Stu.
And this is The Science of Fiction.
Pick up the tricorder, put it on your head. Scanning the planet, see if anyone is dead. Autonomous car driving in Zanzibar. Beam me up, Scotty, I'm not that far. Android hoovering, tearing up the place. Flip phones and conference calls, friends in outer space. Astrophysicist sitting on my knee. Asking aliens if they like a cup of tea.
I've got an addiction to the science of fiction. I've got an addiction to the science of fiction. I've got an addiction, baby, to the science of fiction. I've got an addiction to the science of fiction.
Welcome back, everyone, to episode 3 of season 2 of The Science of Fiction. This is our end of the world series. In the room with me, I have Stu and Stoby.
Hello.
Shall we just dive in?
As always.
What are we diving into this time, boss?
Right, we're going to dive into artificial intelligence. Are we going to get destroyed by super intelligent machines?
So my instant reaction is no, because I've seen what they can do. I've worked with enough machinery that doesn't get, when it goes, I'm having a problem. Is it because you're broken? Yeah. So, yeah. I've worked with automated systems before, and automated systems have a terrible habit of breaking down because one small thing doesn't go the way it wants to, and it just causes the whole thing to go down.
That sounds like a child.
Yeah, exactly.
We've answered the question now. Thanks for listening, guys.
As far as I'm concerned, Skynet's not going to happen because a bullet's going to miss the wrong port, and it's just going to be out of control error, out of cheese.
Out of cheese. Wow, okay. So that's pretty strong out of the gate.
Yeah,
so
I'm a massive pessimist.
That's going to be a problem.
Shortest podcast ever.
From personal experience, having worked with automated stuff and its inability to deal with itself, no. But I might be wrong. Yeah. I could be wrong, but I've spoken to people who've worked in AI. But we'll get into that.
Okay, cool. Stokes, what's your initial first
Yeah, I mean, my gut reaction is less ranty, more the same.
But that's what I'm here for. I bring the ranting.
But again, it's similar to having worked with machine learning and neural networks and things like that. I just don't see how they. We'll get into it. But I mean, I think the first thing to look at is just look at sort of fictional scenarios of what's happened.
Yeah.
I think the one everyone will go to, and any time there's a news report about AI. Machines, robots, anything like that, it always goes back to Skynet. And everyone knows what Skynet is.
Yeah.
That's the funny thing, because Skynet is not the name of a film.
No.
It's not even the name of a character. It's the name of a system in a film.
Some might say it's the major protagonist of the film series.
Potentially, yeah. Yeah, because
the same way that the iceberg is the main protagonist of Titanic.
Absolutely.
So yeah, if you don't know what Skynet is and you've never seen a Terminator before, should you go and see a Terminator? You should
probably go see a Terminator.
Go see a Terminator. There's lots of choices. I mean, the original's not bad. Terminator 2
is probably one of the best.
Objectively the best.
The retired ones go and kill rodents and stuff now, don't they?
Yeah, ex-Terminators.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I'm just going to giant skip over that one. So... let's be clear then. So Skynet is a computer system that is designed by the military,
films. It's essentially an AI system that is designed to deal with threats to humanity or become self-aware, essentially.
Yeah, so it's. I think in one of the iterations of it, it's in control of the US's nuclear capability or something.
Yeah.
And then it decides that the principal threat to humans is humans, and... that decides to get rid of the humans or become self-aware. I guess in different versions of different,
But it didn't think ahead, because in deciding that humans were the biggest threats to humans, it became the biggest threat to humans. So why didn't it eradicate itself?
Yeah. So I guess
I think that's a wibbly wobbly timey wimey question, which you can go back and look at a different episode about.
Yeah. I guess a more sort of concrete argument would be that it just became sentient and decided it just didn't like humans.
Yeah, I think it became self-aware and decided that, yeah, humans were bad.
Let's get rid of them.
And then that leads into the storyline of basically one character being the thing that takes down Skynet. So it tries to prevent it from that person from existing by sort of going back in time.
Yeah.
Which then begets a whole wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey kerfuffle, which ends with Matt Smith being sent through time, if that's what happened in the last movie that was existed.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll move on from that cluster knuckle to talk actually about AI.
And Matt Smith?
Yeah, he's in Regenesis, the last time Terminator movie.
I don't remember.
Something
that.
Weird happens at the end with Matt Smith being involved, very briefly. But like I said, I've only actually...
Did he have a sonic screwdriver?
No, he didn't.
Oh, so that would have been a nice sweet crossover. Yeah.
The weirdest crossover ever.
Yeah.
But yeah, so let's actually talk about AI, computer learning, and the ability for it to become sort of self-actuating.
Yeah, so yeah, the common conception of AI, and so I don't want to say, like, a term I kept reading was Luddite, and I don't like that term. But in the sort of common mindset, I guess, is... common perception of future AI is robots, computers that can basically tackle any challenge in the same way that the human brain can after being modelled on the neurological processes in there. And that's not in our lifetime.
It's an oversimplification.
Yes. And it's like our hardware is not sophisticated enough. Even if it was sophisticated enough, our ability to program something that we don't fully understand yet ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, it's impossible. It'd be like me trying to draw the internal workings of a car. I have no idea about all the internal workings of a car, so how can I draw or program such a thing?
I mean, you can essentially, like, I've spoken to someone who knows about sort of the machine learning style, with animals and other things, and certainly with AI. But she was very much of the opinion that you can essentially program a computer to do a task exceptionally well. We've seen that with Deep Blue when it comes to playing chess. And you said very early science, computer science lessons, you're taught how to teach a computer how to play tic-tac-toe and such. And the example she gave me is that you can teach a computer to recognize from a picture an avocado. And it will if you ask it a question, is this an avocado? It will look at it and go, yes, but it's still going to go wrong. You then give it any, but that's one small task which has taken a long time to get to perfection, because it's still always going to, every so often you throw a picture of a cat and it's going to go, it's an avocado. And you're going, no, it's not an avocado. And that shows you that it's not flawless. Like any human you show an avocado to, they'll go, it's an avocado.
Oh, that's something edible, I can't remember the name. But exactly, it's not going to say, oh, there's a cat in your hand.
Exactly. Mm. So, I mean, like, it takes a lot of effort to get a computer to do one thing
really well.
Really, really well, but never perfectly, to get them to be able to do conscious thought and rational thinking is way off as far as that opinion is.
Yeah, so with a person, right, you introduce them to a new object and you say they'd never seen a cat before, just for the example. You introduce them, say, this is a cat. They go, all right, okay. That's it. They know what a cat is.
Mm.
But if you've got this image recognition system, all the processes behind it needs manual labeling. So you need lots of examples of avocados to say avocado, avocado, avocado. And humans manually label these pictures, say avocado, no avocado, no cat, you know, and things like that. So it's still very, very limited to specific, like you say, specific tasks. And yeah, there's an image recognition site, I can't remember the name off the top of my head. I've seen it working. I've been in a lecture where they've discussed in extreme technical detail how it works and how it goes through all these different processes and layering and things like that. And it still gets it wrong. It's very good. And you can give it lots of pictures, it'll say, bo. And it shows you the 16 or 32 different ways it's viewed this picture and how it's pixelated it and different shades and things like that. And it's went, I think this is a horse. Yeah, it's a horse. I think this is a bo. And it still gets it wrong. A live working website still gets it wrong.
Mm.
So for it to then identify friend or foe.
Yeah.
You know, in a real life situation like the T-800, T-1000, whatever, wandering around going, I'm after him, anyone else is just a foe, which T-800 was slightly different after he'd been sent back, you know, reprogrammed and sent back. He could identify threats and non-threats, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Even that, I mean, it is just pure, pure sci-fi. This is funny, this one, because this is one where we're like, yeah, it just will not happen. This is like Thor's hammer episode all over again.
Yeah. I'm not saying it.
Does one of us have to be devil's advocate then and say, oh, AI is going to happen? Like, because I'm kind of on your side. I'm not sure that the common picture of AI as being basically a human brain inside the silicon component, I'm not sure that ever works. I think what we always forget is that we're more than our brains, right? We're like our
instincts and emotions.
We're a big composite of our senses, our emotions, our instincts, our actions. Like, I feel like the parts of the body that we are also tend to influence who we are as intelligent.
This is going to sound like a really strange sort of segue into something else, but like, there's a lot of research going on into artificial pancreases at the moment.
Okay.
And this, again, I have a very working knowledge of it, but
yeah.
A lot of, when you're dealing with things like diabetes and so forth, like a lot of the readings come back and you make the adjustments yourselves based on, for the insulin thing. What they want to design essentially is a artificial program that can do the work of the pancreas and do that work itself. It's almost like AI, where it's basically doing that.
Yeah.
But your biggest thing is that nobody trusts it.
Yes.
And that's the other thing.
Yeah,
it can affect health at a very direct level.
Yeah.
If your pancreas goes for a system update and the update fails, right?
I mean, this is the big question. It's like, if the artificial pancreas works, and then something goes horribly wrong, then you have this whole who's to blame thing.
Mm.
Like, yes. Is it whoever made it, whoever programmed it? Is it the person who's using it?
And that's the same with insurance.
Or is it just the artificial
Same with insurance for driverless cars or liability for driverless cars.
Yeah.
They crash and kill someone who's liable.
Yeah.
You know, is it the person in the machine because they chose, you know, they waived the right to...
As soon as decision-making comes into it, that's where the fear comes. I think that is where the fear in AI is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not necessarily the fact that it could do it, but it's the fact that like, these decisions get taken out of your hands and it's making this decision based off rules and logic and whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas us as humans, we're throwing in experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I touch the thing, it's hot. I'm not touching that.
Yeah. Whereas the computer might be like, well, it might not be hot this time. Oh, it's still hot. Okay, that's 100% still hot.
Yeah. So, like, and again, previous experiences, emotions, various biological things that can't be replicated within the AI, that all affects how our decision making is done.
Yeah. And you can see why that level of trust is kind of not there. So, to take your point about driverless cars, I was watching reading a report about the image recognition systems that are in place for driverless cars, because obviously there'll be times when your driverless car is going down a street and, you know, a little girl runs out on the road. And what you want the car to do is to say, I detect this girl, I'm going to safely stop the car so nobody gets hurt. And so what the car is doing is it's receiving information, you know, it's getting images every fraction of a second, processing the image and saying, is there a girl? Is there a hazard? Is there something I should stop the car for? And what these researchers did was they took some of the systems that are being used in some of these test cars, and all they did was very slightly change the image. And in one, I think they changed the contrast of the image. And that was enough for it to go from saying, I see a girl, I'm going to stop the car, to I don't see a girl, I'm not going to stop the car, right? Now, contrast changes tend to happen when the sun is in the sky or not in the sky. So in that particular training set, if the sun went behind a cloud during that particular driving situation, it's quite possible that we've gone from saying, I don't see a girl, to I see a girl, or vice versa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that level of like pure danger. And in more extreme cases, they did some extra kind of image processing of things like brick walls, to the point where the car was like, I don't see a wall. So your car could just drive straight into a wall at, you know, typical driving speed without slowing down at all because, you know, it's for whatever reason, the image it's seeing of the wall, it's processing as that's fine. Now imagine, and because the future of these cars is that they're all going to be hooked up to the internet in some way, or they're going to be hooked up to each other so they can do distance measurements and,
You can do very fancy things with traffic flows if all the cars know where every other car is, and you can, you know, there's crazy examples of people doing, like, you know, horrific dovetailing junctions where the cars just don't stop. They just go and interleaf. Mm-hmm. If somebody hacks one of the cars and injects some malicious code into the image processing system where the image itself just gets very slightly changed, 120 car pileup.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's the risk as well, is the malice. Yeah. I mean, we've not even looked at that yet as human malice. If you've seen Fast and Furious 8, ridiculous film. Ridiculous. But
was it just getting ridiculous then?
No.
to get ridiculous.
The funny thing is, right, I do still enjoy them, but you have to accept...
There's a place for them. I agree.
You have to accept...
Going back to the discussion about Armageddon, there's a place for those sort of movies.
Yes.
Like, they're popcorn movies. You let go and you move.
And you have to accept that they all got superpowers at about the fourth film or something like that.
Or they're all already dead and we're just living in a coma dream.
But in this film, suddenly 99% of the cars on the road are hackable.
Yeah.
And because the main villains are hackers. And so suddenly there's this scene which is ridiculous with hundreds of cars basically boxing this one car in and then like crashing out in multi-stories to pile up on top of the car. It's insane. But yeah, human malice, suddenly you've got a bigger issue and you've got to protect against that.
Yeah.
And that's where, if you were designing killer robots, so going back to the ones that were just on wheels and just shotguns from Terminator, for example, or any film where there's killer robots, even like Daleks or something like that.
Yeah,
so lost in space.
Yeah, so you develop this robot that is going to go into war zones and make it safe for your people so that they don't have to be in there and it can go in and root out, you know, whatever. You have to make sure it is not hackable, which means it's not going to be easy to shut down.
Yeah.
Which means if it goes wrong, you've got a big problem. Mm-hmm. At that point. But that's not a global destruction point of view. That is a localized, we need to deal with this problem without getting killed kind of thing.
Yeah. But it's that journey we're taking from really dumb computers where they can only really do the things we tell them to do. We can tell them how to play chess because chess is a deterministic game. We're now at the stage where we can make less dumb computers, where we can say, I want you to do something soft, like tell me if that thing you're seeing is a piece of road or a bottle or something.
Yeah.
And then there's going to be a journey beyond that where it can do something better. It's not necessarily sentient, but it can do quite clever things with data and it can, you know, generate interesting ideas or it can, you know, solve problems. There was a thing recently where they fed a bunch of material science papers into, I'm not quite sure what the model was, but the model spat out, like, you know, a bunch of things that were discovered, you know, so they had papers from, I think it was the 90s into the early 2000s, that model then predicted the discoveries that would happen over the next 10 years. It predicted new elements in the periodic table, I think, that were discovered in that time frame. And it then has like a bunch of things that haven't been discovered yet, right? So now people are going like, is this right? So we're going to have a look and see if this has actually done it right. And it's predicted these things in material science and like, oh, you should try and mix this and this together because this will happen. And you're like, oh, we should maybe go and do what the computer says and go mix these things together and see if this happens.
End of the world. Oh, Skynet.
But this is an interesting point where we've gone from us telling the computer to do everything to the computer now saying, oh, why don't you do that?
It's almost like conversation.
And like recommendation systems are another example of that. Like, because we are all in that process where, you know, you go and watch a film on Netflix and it's now saying, oh, let me serve you this content that you might like because you watch this film. So we're in this now transition of the computer saying, why don't you do this? Or you're typing a message and you have something that's in some cases is machine learning saying, you probably want to type this word next. And I think in some phones it's saying, normally you type this word next. So I'm going to give you this word.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's learning based off of you. And we're in this kind of switch from humans telling computers what to do to computers telling humans what to do.
There are some terrifying episodes of Black Mirror that deal with this sort of thing.
Yeah.
Black Mirror, yeah, again, very, this episode where you're just like, this is creepy.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's real, it feels like it could happen. I think that's what they do so well.
That's the most unnerving stuff to watch, is that when it feels it's real.
Yeah.
You know.
I'm just going to, again, I'm going to take another real steer off to the left, but there is a theme that turns up in some sci-fi stuff. Predominantly, the ones that come to my mind are mostly computer games. When you have that true AI, if that true AI happens.
Right, okay.
So say, theoretically, AI does exist. We managed to get to that singularity point and boom, there we go. We've got an AI that thinks and just does all that. Then you have an interesting situation about rights.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a real thing? Does it have rights? Mm-hmm. Does it have, like, when AIs are servants, when do they go from being servants to being people?
Yes. Like an iRobot.
An iRobot, mm-hmm. in the one with Millennium the Bicentennial Man, sorry.
Oh, right.
Bicentennial Man with Robin Williams.
Yeah.
You've got the Geth in Mass Effect.
Mm-hmm.
You've got you've got the Omnix in Overwatch. A lot of these stories and a lot of these hinge around these things becoming protagonists, or antagonists, sorry, to the storyline, because they reach a point of self-realization. They go, no, hold on, you can't treat us like this anymore. We're no longer servants. We're equals. We're just as smart as you. We're people.
Mm.
And the real thing's going, no, no, you're still a robot. You don't have those rights. And that's a huge factor to take into effect,
yeah.
Because if it thinks like a human and it can rationalize like a human and it can do all the things, if it is true AI, doesn't it have that thing?
But yeah, so the word robot is from, is it the Czech or the Polish? I forget which one, for slave.
There you go.
Right, which is always an interesting thing to remember, that the word robot in its original form means slave, right? And you're talking about an intelligence that's maybe encased in a robot that has, the ability to ration for itself and to say, no, I don't want to do this. And I think we're having some of these discussions now about the rights of other biological organisms. People want to push the conversation and say, well, especially people who are, very strongly vegan and believe in, the rights of animals. We're not just saying, they want animals to be treated as people, as legal persons, to have the rights of a person. So, the lunch that I've just eaten, right? In that environment, that would become a crime because I'd eaten a person, right? I didn't. I ate a chicken, right? But in a legal sense...
Well, we just established it's not like a 4-mile chicken that's come out of space.
You better be listening to these episodes in a row, otherwise these in-jokes are not going to make sense.
We've got fans out there. I'm pretty certain there's going to be someone who titters at that.
Yeah. But it's the same kind of discussion, right? Where something where we originally have decided, no, that entity does not require the legal status of a person, doesn't require the these rights.
But is that the refusal of rights to something that believes it has a right?
Yeah.
Because it thinks like that. Is that the trigger that causes Skynet? Because it goes, well, you've been using me as an auxiliary. I know what's better for you. I know how to do this. You should treat me like this. Mm. I'm not getting these rights. And then you get into a whole parallel back to human history.
Yeah. And I guess if you mistreat an AI, does it retaliate?
Exactly.
And if AI has access to the right units, the right technology, its retaliation can be brutal, right? If it has access to the launch codes, what can it do?
Even simpler things like it has access to your electricity supply, so it switches off your fridge or and it's just little things like that. It just makes your life uncomfortable.
Yeah. It has access to your traffic network and it crashes all your cars.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Or it has access to all your money and gets rid of it all.
See, I think going back to your medical example, I think that's a good place, and that's where a lot of AI focus is at the moment, is in medicine.
Mm.
If you search for AI papers, it's just medicine, medicine, medicine. I was at a lecture a couple of months ago where the person was talking about how they'd been using AI to assist doctors.
Mm.
And what it was doing was it was taking the medical history of this person and predicting what their future medical history could look like,
mm-hmm.
in certain ways, because it's almost like your non-linear model in a way.
Yeah.
No human is, you could have an illness and never have it again, or you could get it every year.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, this was just suggesting things and saying to the doctor, you need to look out for this.
Mm.
But it was handing control back to the doctor to make... it wasn't saying, you're going to have this in 5 years' time, so we're going to start this course of treatment now and prevent it. It was just giving that advice in a way, which I think is the most effective use of AI at the moment is to just
forecasting.
Do the analysis,
yeah.
You know, it's just turning around saying, here's what I think, and the doctor's going, right, no, that's quite good, actually. I see why you think that, and I'd agree.
Yeah.
But I'd have taken 3 months to get to that decision.
Yes. So a lot of it is more just the fact that humans can process knowledge at a certain speed, whereas, you know, if you have a what I guess is an expert system, technically, that is processing medical data, and that's all it does, it eats, sleeps, and breathes medical data, then, yeah, it's going to have, you know, all that stuff at its fingertips and say, look, this patient you're treating has a 60% chance of developing breast cancer in the next 5 years. You should make sure that they have mammograms during that period, right? Mm-hmm.
What's up, Fair City Podcast? This is Chris and Dan from Fresh Talk. Check us out at freshtalkpodcast.com.
That's right. And if you had any idea how long it took me and Dan to do that bumper, you would actually probably never listen to us.
It's totally true. Get him, Stobie.
Hey, Stobie, it's me, Jarrett. Go to JarrettGoesToTheMovies.com. Check out the podcast. Also, go to Rockstar Dad Show. Check that one out, too. It's freaking great. They're both great. Also, you just got a text and a Facebook message.
Yeah.
And I probably better give you this phone back.
Hello, this is Jim.
And my name is Graham Chen Jack.
And we're both responsible for the monstrosity that is A Bloody Mess Podcast.
We can be found at www.facebook.com/messpodcast, twitter.com/mess_podcast, Instagram is A Bloody Mess.
And we're our alternative Wednesdays to the Science of Fiction podcast, which is a must listen.
I think this sort of analysis and being able to take mass amounts of data that a human mind just wouldn't be able to take in to focus is possibly one of the most interesting uses of AI. Mm. And like we see it in media.
Yeah.
There are TV shows that have taken this and run with it. Person of Interest is a perfect example of that. It's an AI system that is designed to take various information from legitimate and illegitimate sources, because that's what the government, because it's the government system.
This is a TV show, right?
This is a TV show.
Okay.
And it basically analyzes this information, communications, trends, habits, connections, and all sorts of stuff. Like the degree of analysis that this thing does is astounding. But the idea is that the main design of the thing is to prevent terrorist attacks or atrocities, major safety events to prevent. But what it ends up doing, and what the focus of the show, is it basically starts to discover psychological trends in people who may be at risk from attacks or be prone to do something that would be dangerous. Mm-hmm. And as far as the government's concerned, they don't care. Like, they just want to stop the big terrorist events, which are going to be the big things. But these little things, which are still people, human beings, that are in danger potentially from these trends. And throughout the series, you see this AI essentially pumping these numbers out and they go and investigate it. But then they start to delve into how the developer of this AI worked it. And it becomes very obvious fairly early on that he essentially nurtured it almost like a child. Mm. Like, he has a relationship with it, he talks to it, he teaches it the same way you would teach a child. And when the child misbehaves or does the thing that he doesn't want it to do, he punishes it. Or tells it, no, that's not what you do, you don't do that. This is what you do. Which then comes into stark contrast later on, where you then have a earlier version or a stripped down version of this program, similar program, or essentially bare bones, which is then brought online by a government troop later on without that experience, without that nurturing and that sort of, this is how we treat people, this is how we work, this is what this means, this is how you do this, is then brought online by the government and becomes a lot more malicious. It's a lot more logical. It looks at humans and goes, this is how we can improve humans, and starts manipulating the situation in ways that most normal humans wouldn't understand. Like they it starts to look at like, well, these people, this is where the genetics are going. This is like, we can do this and do that. And you see these two AIs, which are begat from the same code, but that influence from that one person who's taught it how to interact with humans. And it is a benevolent AI versus this malevolent AI who just looks at humans and says, you're just numbers and dots to me. This is how I get the best out of you. Whereas the, I think, and that is first of all, it's a great show. I do recommend going to see it. Absolutely fantastic. But it's a really fascinating sort of investigation into that whole AI thing.
And it's likening it to humans, really, isn't it?
Yeah. I guess it kind of says, going back to your point about do sentient AIs deserve rights, it's almost saying, well, if you're capable of recognizing the rights of another person, is that the criterion for saying that you also deserve those rights?
If empathy,
you
almost.
Like that level of empathy, saying, okay, you're a machine, but you recognize that we are two separate entities and I also have the right to existence and the right to make my own choices and have freedom. I'll give you the same back if you give it to me, and it's like a contract. And that might be the way that we solve these problems, you know. But
it's like what are they called? Three laws.
Asimov's three laws, yeah.
You know, because they basically, they're there to allow the robots the freedom, or the AIs the freedom, but...
But they have strict rules.
They can't hurt.
Yeah.
I think the
thing that people always say is, well, look, Asimov wrote these three laws and they work. And it's like, well, look, read Asimov's fiction. Asimov's fiction is about how those three laws don't work, right? There's always an edge case, right? There's always a way that you can find a robot to circumvent those laws and do something that is damaging.
Or a logic stop that basically contradicts themselves, and then you get problems.
Yeah. Or they apply the laws perfectly and they go, oh, wait a minute, that's not what we wanted to happen, you know, and you realise that the three laws themselves are imperfect.
Yeah. I think it's quite interesting because when I was looking through this, I was finding a lot of like myths and gathered up these sort of myths and the facts behind it. And the facts aren't really facts. They're more almost like opinions in a way. Like the first one is that superintelligence by 2100 is either inevitable or impossible, depending on where you're reading. And what they're saying is it may happen in decades, centuries, or never.
Yeah.
AI experts disagree and we simply don't know.
Yeah.
And and the thing is that's where the, coming back to the hardware limitations, you know, we just don't have the capabilities at the moment for that.
I guess that's also touching on like a secondary point. It's not just about, can you build something that's intelligent? But can you build something that's intelligent and understands fully how to make another intelligence?
Yes.
Right? Because if you can do that, then they can go, right, okay, you built me. I'm AI number one. And this is how I work. Right? This is what makes me intelligent. If you tweak this bit here and this bit here, I'll make AI number two is even better than me. And that process can keep on going. And it can happen quicker and quicker as each AI gets more developed and more focused. And eventually go from basic AI that can grasp itself to what they call a super intelligent AI, which is beyond the realms of our possibilities, something we can't even comprehend.
I mean, you're looking at things that almost pretty much happens in Age of Ultron, the movie, because essentially Ultron just keeps rebuilding new versions, building better versions to establish it.
Yeah, and it's that kind of... But the thing is, in the film, it takes some time. In this kind of picture, it would happen in less than a day. It would happen in hours.
And that brings up another question, because you could argue that we are the dominant species on the planet.
Yes.
Why are we the dominant species?
Because...
Intelligence.
Mm. So, and the fact we killed all the other...
All the other
hominids, right?
We're smart enough to do it, though.
Yeah.
But that brings up the question, then, if a machine did become more intelligent, would we then become subservient to it? You know, would it...
Depends on its motives. Does it recognise the rights of humans? In the same way that, like flipping that question you have in his head, like, do we recognise the rights of AI? Would it recognise the rights of us?
Mm-hmm.
Would it see us as an equal, or would it see us the way that we look at animals?
Yeah. And there's been many examples of fiction of humanity being enslaved by the robots to do... Which is almost ironic in a way, to do jobs that the robots could actually do better.
Yes. You know? And in some ways, we're enslaved by technology in a very different way, right?
Yeah.
Like, there is 1, 2, 3 devices on the table which occupy a lot of our own time, you know, and it's our way that we access each other in the world, and that's a form of bondage, right? If you think about it too hard.
So, yeah, it's,
I mean,
it's
in The Matrix, that's essentially what happens. The AI becomes overpowers humans. The humans try to fight back by essentially firing off nukes to stop their solar power. And then humans, the robots are sort of, we'll just take power out of you.
We'll just use as
batteries. Now, I'm a little sketchy on the science on that.
How effective would humans be as batteries?
Not very, I don't think.
Even like if you went just base level kinetic energy from a heart pumping?
Not very much.
Nah.
Well, it's not just that, you've got to feed them. Yeah. You know, there's a huge sort of support system.
What are you talking about? Bear in mind there's 7 billion of us?
They're fed by melted down other humans.
Yeah, I guess there's that level of like...
sort of self, what's the word?
The circle of life.
It's a very, very fucking small circle.
Yeah, because I always
it's a read dot. That,
like that, that whole premise I always thought was a lie. I didn't think that's why the machines actually kept humans. I think they kept humans because they were genuinely interested in them. Yes. And that they were using it as a learning tool.
Maybe.
They're looking at human society and going, right, we need to sit here and watch the mistakes they all made so that we can make sure that we don't make those mistakes. But then they got themselves into a situation where, like, well, okay, we've now tried to create this situation. It's getting out of control. How do we fix it? And then they came up with a solution. But, I don't think, from a science point of view, I can't see how much energy. Yeah,
how much you talk about brain activity and it'd be there being sort of like there being a degree of electric.
Oh, it's electrical activity. Yeah. Yes, it's electrical.
I mean, if you had 7 million, 7 billion brains and hearts and that sort of thing, and the nerves, and if again, I don't know how much electricity a human body, but if you factor that out by 7 billion and potentially more given the time frame that say something like The Matrix comes out, I mean, if robots look at humans as batteries and are basically going, well, we can always start breeding them and getting more.
What if robots looked at humans as processors? In the same way to mine Bitcoin or do complex calculations, companies will actually use other connections over the internet, other processors over the internet to pump through all these masses of data. What if human brains could be done in the same way?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, maybe that's why they were keeping them storage. They said it was batteries, but it was actually processing power. Yeah. I am a GPU.
But to go back to your question, the electrical activity you could that humans have isn't that big, really. I don't think, like, if you plugged me into my iPhone, it would take me a long time for me to charge the iPhone purely on, like, the electrons shifting around. The other problem is, how do I get my electrons out? Like, where do they go?
Without losing... Because you obviously still need them.
You do, right. So you're going to have to give me electrons back to make sure my brain doesn't shut down. So, maybe it is part of the film premise, but it's not good science if it is.
Sorry, Matrix.
Sorry, Matrix.
There's a new one coming soon. A new one in the pipeline.
What?
Not a reboot, but a different story. Based within the world, I believe. It was very sketchy in the details. It's still early days.
Right.
But I'm quite excited by that. I watched The Matrix just a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
You know, it's 20 years old now.
Yeah.
Don't say things.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I watched it and it still actually holds up all right. Yeah.
The original does. Yeah.
Yeah, there's
I remember
dodgy technology.
I remember going to see the second one with you in Edinburgh. And we were both walking out going, I don't know what I just watched.
All I could remember is it's the scene where Neo's fighting all the Agent Smiths.
Yeah.
And he uses like the pipe and he absolutely like smacks one out. And I think, was it you that yelled, oh, run! As Smith is like rolling out of shot. And yeah, I couldn't take the movie seriously after that.
That does sound like something I would say. I did start to ruin The Matrix for everyone.
I mean, to be honest, we'd had a few beers before we went to that film, I think it was needed.
The third most Matrix movie just providing commentary.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. So, like, anyway.
No, it's fine. I was just going to say, so I guess another worry that people have is AI turning evil, which is...
malevolent.
Yeah, it's not so much it would turn evil, it potentially actually do what it's supposed to do, just like you said earlier, but its goals are just misaligned. They're not quite exactly... So you've got your three laws and they sound great, But in practice, it actually becomes a massive problem because of X and Y or whatever.
Well, it's just, again, it comes down to that sort of almost the semantics. It's like when you provide these laws to a something that thinks like that, it just goes, well, your biggest threat to yourself, to the human race, is humans, because you're going to destroy the world through climate change.
Yeah.
Or even just going down to it a bit more simpler, it's the joke, when I nod my head, you hit it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just things like that. It's just misinterpretation of words we take in context we take for granted as well. And okay, it won't be spoken, it'll be programmed in. Yeah.
God but damn Oxford comma!
Yeah. And to go back to your original point, you know, it's like, okay, what's the biggest threat to humans right now? Oh, it's climate change. How do I fix climate change? Oh, I've just read these solutions online. I'll just put all these aerosols in the atmosphere, or I'll just build this giant space mirror or whatever. I'll do this thing. Or actually what I'll do is I'll build all these machines and try and push the Earth out of its orbit. You know, like ridiculous mad ideas that to a computer, like, well, that's just the obvious thing to do, right? And it's busy doing that and you're like, what are you doing, computer? And
it's like, just pinging away.
Please wait.
Do you know what those circles are called, by the way? You know the little circles that go around the ring?
Are they called circles?
No, they're not. Do you know what they're called?
No.
Throbbers. Not even joking.
Throbbers.
Oh, amazing.
It's like, I pushed the processor too hard, I've got a throbber. Sorry, total aside.
Oh my God.
Go and have a shower.
What?
but yeah, it could, like you say, it's saying, I'll be back in a minute. Meanwhile, it's pumping aerosols out and writing the science of fiction season 2, episode 2 in the sky, you know?
or it just gets corrupted.
Right? And it's making these decisions without confirmation or
like
authority.
If you do some kind of like data injection into an AI who's trying to do a task, and it's like, oh, okay, now you need to go and do this. It's like, actually, it's, you know, doing something you totally don't want it to do.
But I mean, that's the other sort of fear is that it's not even something that anyone predicted. It's literally one line of code, one binary dot out of place.
Yeah.
Just causes the whole thing to glitch.
Yes.
And at that point, you just don't know what it is. And I mean, we talk about it obviously never happening and all of these things, but you've got to say, from a point of view of tapping into human fear, AI makes a astounding antagonist impact factor into that. Like watching those episodes of Black Mirror, watching Person of Interest, playing Mass Effect, there's that point where the Geth are terrifying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you're just looking at it going, oh my God, this is AI. Just the idea.
Right? But I think it's the same way then, like, that in certain films, like psychopaths are really terrifying, or people who have no emotional affect. And then when you see them interacting and it's just completely cold and they do not give a shit about you. And that's the classic picture of AI, it's like, you're nothing to me.
Because there's no way of stopping them. You can't reason with them. You have to kill them, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's where Robert Patrick is terrifying in Terminator 2.
His portrayal of that is amazing. I mean, look how much acting Arnie does in the first one. Second one, third one, fourth one, fifth one, all the rest.
They're making another one.
Yeah, they've made another one.
It's nearly out. It's got a lot of the original cast.
Edward Furlong, in fact, it's possibly out already. Depending on
when this is released. That's true, yeah.
Wibbly wobbly tiny wimey.
Yes. Yeah,
Jeremy Berry.
Yeah, exactly.
And I thoroughly enjoyed it.
I will have enjoyed it. But yeah, I mean, like, for me, I mean, AI and time travel are one of those sort of those great concepts, great sort of tropes in anything.
I think that's why Terminator survives, even though there have been so many bad films.
Yeah.
Is that it's just a great trope that it's used really well. It's simple. It taps into, as you say, like a societal fear about losing control of our world to machines. I would argue that we've already lost some control to machines in some ways, right? I mean, it's a lesser thing, but we lose control in terms of, you know, what we choose to watch on Netflix or that kind of thing. But
who just sits and watches normal TV and sits down at 8 o'clock for EastEnders, or sits down and watches the news, and you know, everything's on demand. That's the way things have shifted. And so, yeah, you're right. Everyone's slaves to their devices already. You know, a new season of something drops on Netflix, and you've got 8 hours of content to work your way through. You know, you have to do it.
Yeah, and we have to consume it. Like, it's like the bag of donuts I'm looking at as well. It's the same. It's like intellectual
calls
donuts
to you.
Yeah,
but that's just movies. That's just TV. That's not even your social media. Mm. You know, or just your general web browsing as well.
Look at things like Amazon, where you look at one thing. And then you suddenly it pops up on other things. You're like, hey, we saw you were looking at this. How about this? You went...
Or my kids, hey, we saw you looking at this. Does your wife know?
So, I think it's one of those things like with AI. I mean, it's such a great idea. And because it becomes one of those things that you look at it and go, this would facilitate such a better quality of life for us. Mm. But then does that like it? If it goes so horribly wrong, it could go so horribly wrong.
So I think, again, like we touched on this a little bit with climate change last time as well. I think the problem isn't AI. The problem is us. So we're in this situation where we're getting machines, robots, computers to do things that we couldn't get to do in the past, and that's getting better and better. And we will have driverless cars at some point, right? We're not going to stop that process. That's going to happen. So we're going to lose certain types of jobs that require you to drive because there'll be a driverless car that can do the job for you. So truck drivers, taxi drivers, all that.
They're already
at risk, right? And some places they're going. And so that's one sort of example of how automation is going to start carving out chunks of human society.
And will create resentment towards said AI.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't have to do that. It just has to make people poor enough that they don't like the political system they're in.
A good example of looking at, like, and it's not AI, but computers replacing jobs, is to look in supermarkets.
Yeah.
And before you had 30 tills, 30 people. And now you've got 30 tells, 8 people.
Yeah.
You know, or whatever, because suddenly one person can man 12 tells.
Yeah, and so you're shaving jobs out of the system. And as you do that, a lot of these jobs are what we'd have referred to as, like, you know, upper working class or middle class jobs. As you carve that out of the political system, do you expect those people just to shut up and say, okay, I don't have a job anymore. I'm going to sit and take benefits, or I'm going to have no money at all. I can't retrain for this. I don't know how to retrain to do these complicated technical jobs. You're going to have revolution, right? And I think that's the bigger risk with AI. And it's not whether AI is going to dominate our lives or destroy humanity. It's that the things that we're doing with computers are going to make our current society so unstable that we're going to have problems. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that worries me the most.
Yeah. I honestly could go into AI stuff all day.
I mean, how long have we been going into AI stuff?
I mean, we're just past 45 minutes. So,
okay,
so
that's maybe.
I think there's a lot longer we can talk about it, and obviously AI isn't really any of our areas of expertise, other than sort of a made Grice. And it would be great to sort of have someone on who does know more about it. And I do sort of know some people, which I'd love to sort of get on.
We should maybe do a wee sort of debate episode or something.
Yeah, and even if it's just a case of getting them to sort of answer some of the questions or queries or stuff we've looked at today, I think that'd be good fun.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I mean, I said AI can quite easily be such a fantastic trope or factor of a story. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Cool. That was creepy.
Right. Shall we sign off?
Stay. Yeah, okay.
Where can we find you?
As ever, you can find me at Barg the Ogre on Twitter, doing very little and just not really paying attention to Twitter.
Okay. Right, Stoey, where can we find you?
Find me at Sci-Fi Podcast, or you can also find me personally at dstoby, and you can find our website fcpod.net/ The Science of Fiction.
We should possibly mention our lovely hosts for this session episode as well.
Oh, we haven't name checked Light Press Studio, who allowed us to use their space.
Yeah, that's true. Light Press Studio for all your media and design needs in Perth.
Nice. And you can find me on Twitter as well. That's at DH4GAN. That's number 4, DH4GAN.
I should maybe clarify, actually, it's Light Press Media and Design, but we're just using their studio. So.
Okay, right, well, I think it's time for us to round up. So say goodbye, everybody.
Bye, goodbye, everybody.
fiction.